Before we dig into Sylvester and the Magic Pebble, or our passage from 2 Timothy, I want to reference a different story, and I'm curious if it's a reference that only the 40 and ups are going to get. The story was originally a novel called Shoeless Joe by W.P. Kinsella, which I confess I didn't read, but I have seen the movie. We have a taker. The movie that it's based on is called Field of Dreams, starring Kevin Costner and the person who melts every Gen X heart, James Earl Jones. But at the center of that story is an unlikely baseball field. Unlikely because it's in the middle of a cornfield in Iowa. And it's there because the farmer who owned that cornfield plowed under a big chunk of his corn crop to build that baseball field, all because he saw a vision of it and heard a voice saying, "If you build it, he will come." And to the appalled amazement of pretty much everyone he knew, he did that. He did exactly what the vision told him to do and plowed under some corn and built a baseball field. And then the movie is worth watching, and if Marin's excited hand raises any indication, the book is worth reading too, so I'll have to do that too. When he built it, he did come, and many things did come. So it's a beautiful story worth watching. But the reason I'm mentioning that phrase, "when he built it, if you build it, he will come," and reference that story, is by way of explaining a bit of why we are centering stories that aren't explicitly Bible stories this summer in our worship series. For one thing, since we don't have Christian Ed after worship services in the summer, we wanted to really prioritize having services that would lend themselves to intergenerational family conversations after the services. And even though I admit this series was my idea, I was a little worried that plowing up traditional worship space to build more time for stories that aren't Bible stories was a little bit like plowing up the cornfield for a baseball field. The only thing is I hadn't thought of that metaphor yet, so I wasn't reassured by it. But I was especially beginning to worry that by centering these stories, we weren't adequately addressing the historical events swirling around us in these particular weeks. From assassination attempts on presidential candidates to a president deciding not to run for re-election barely 100 days ahead of an election, to the Israeli prime minister visiting the U.S. in the midst of so much strife over a largely U.S.-funded war in Gaza, while many Mennonites are literally marching to D.C. to bring attention to this and call for a ceasefire, to the Earth recording hitting the highest daily temperature humans have ever recorded and then doing it again the next day. And that's all in the last 2 weeks. But as I read through the many stories that you all suggested to us, of stories that formed you, or stories that you make sure to read to the young folks in your life, hoping that they are part of their formation, looking for a story that could stand up to all that's going on around us was just heavy on me. And I admit, I had read many William Steig stories, but somehow not this one. And so I went into reading this one as I was reading through all the stories, thinking, this is going to be sweet, but how could a story about a family of talking donkeys who wear glasses and go on picnics and collect rocks be the story we need right now? So I read it with an expectation of entertainment. And I think perhaps it was largely because I put aside the part of me looking for the ethical insight or the theological parallel or the political analogy that my deepest self, my inner child, my heart and soul showed up. Because after all, it was just a story, right? And I believe this is the power of story for us this summer. That a story is a place that invites our souls to show up. And this is exactly the kind of moment in history when we desperately and deeply need all the invitations we can find for our souls to show up. It was after reading this story and reflecting on, really marveling at, how it invited me to show up for it, that the voice of, "If you build it, he will come," came to my mind. And I was gratefully reminded of the metaphor of the baseball field and the cornfield. And the tender drama of Sylvester and the magic pebble richly rewarded me for the ground I plowed under for it. And I hope it does for you too. There are so many moments in today's story when one could highlight, which one could highlight, and perhaps you're sitting here knowing a very particular part spoke to you very, very clearly. But for me, it was the moment that Sylvester turned into a rock. Here he was with the power to quite literally do anything in the palm of his hand. But when confronted with fear, and legitimate fear in the form of a lion, his mind didn't jump to a weapon or a protector or to wish himself home or to wish the lion away. He instinctively turned himself into a rock, impervious and immobilized and completely trapped inside his defense mechanism, the first one that came to mind. He was unrecognizable to those who loved and knew him best, and he couldn't even reach out to touch the rock that could have changed it all back, that was right next to him. Is this not an excellent rendering of fear? There we are, still in the midst of everything and everyone we know, still very aware of all that's going on within and around us. And yet our thoughts aren't able to reach out and make our body respond or let the ones we know who love us around us, let them know what's going on. All the resources we could need might be right there, but we can't reach them. And as I read this story, I truly wondered, because I hadn't read it before, how in the world was Sylvester going to be returned to himself? Knowing the children's book industry in the United States, I had a high degree of trust that something would, because most of our children's stories don't end with good children turned into rocks. But how was the author going to bring this about? Well, they'd already introduced the element of magic, so that gives you a lot of possibilities right there. This is a world where a magical intervention could happen. But after he turns into a rock, time passes, more time passes, more time passes, seasons pass, the long mundane work of grief and loss. His parents desperately, frantically search, no magical intervention. They move into a season of waiting by the window, no magical intervention, to trying to allow themselves to find a little happiness amidst the grief they've resigned themselves to. No magical intervention. So they take a picnic lunch out into the woods and find themselves drawn to Sylvester the Rock. And as they spread their lunch on the rock, they tell fond memories of Sylvester to each other. And the warmth of his mother's presence sitting on the rock wakes Sylvester up from his deep winter sleep, the story says. In his mind, he calls out to them, but of course, as a rock, he can't say that. Then his father sees the shiny red pebble and immediately recognizes it as something that Sylvester would have loved, would have collected. He says this out loud as he picks up the pebble and puts it on the rock. By now, as the story, I love this line from the story, Sylvester was as wake as a donkey that was a rock could possibly be. But he doesn't know that he's touching the magic pebble yet. His mother says to his father, "I wish Sylvester was here with us, don't you?" And as two people carrying the same loss often do, they responded very differently to the moment. His father simply gave her a look, and they were both sad again. But Sylvester answers his mother's question to himself, "I wish I were my real self again." And in less than an instant, he was, the story says. Because his parents had reunited Sylvester the Rock with the magic pebble, and he made that wish. Actually, though, I would argue that it wasn't an instant. It actually had taken a lot of time for that moment. And the steady, loving presence of family who knew Sylvester deeply and could see signs of him even when he was completely hidden and entombed in fear. My heart recognized, as it was being narrated, that how deeply they knew and loved Sylvester was going to be part of the magic that freed him from the rock. But I also loved that it was his wish that finally released him, even as it was his wish that had trapped him. And I even loved the rock that Sylvester became. It truly saved his life. And how true that feels, this portrayal of how impossible it can feel to release or emerge from things or ways of being that have once saved us, even once they've outgrown their use. I wonder about the role of the little pebble. Although we live our lives dreaming of having plenty, so we'll never have to worry again, somehow in a story we know in a way that we can't grasp in life that an object that grants only one person everything is never going to be an object that will bring the kind of happiness the main character yearns for. We can see that for them in the story, much harder to see for ourselves in the moment. There's a lesson here, I believe, parallel to the last verse in today's passage in 2 Timothy, which I remember most clearly from the King James, which says, "For God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." Newer versions say a spirit of cowardice or a spirit that is timid, but looking over the instances of the same Greek root word in the New Testament, fear doesn't seem like a bad translation to me. This morning, though, I'm grateful for the reminder that a little donkey can be just as worthy a bearer of the divine as a role of scripture. We Christians have a long tradition of adding donkeys into our most sacred stories. After all, none of the Gospels say Mary rode to Bethlehem on a donkey, but we know that donkey carried her there. And a donkey does appear later in the Gospels to carry Jesus to Jerusalem before his last week. I am grateful for the power of stories to build spaces within us that invite our deepest selves out to play, the parts of ourselves with the deepest capacity for wonder and connection and truth recognition. So in this season of uncertainty and fear, may the story of Sylvester give you hope for the parts of you that are hidden away in fear, for the parts of the world that are hidden in fear right now, and also inspiration to keep showing up for each other in the simple, persistent, loving, yet magically powerful ways that set the stage for us to free ourselves from our fears when we are ready and able to.